Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:07 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is February 4th, and Gong Chi Fa Cai for everyone who's celebrating Chinese New Year. Of course, what this also means is that the mainland market is going to be shut all week, the Hong Kong market at least for a few days, and the same with Taiwan. When we look at what's been going on out there in the wider world, I think there are three important things that were happening in here today. The first is the rebound that we've seen in some of the bigger technology companies, and I think it is worth just looking at those charts. Then we have the rebound that's occurred in the nickel price, and I think that's also something that we should look at. But what I'd like to start off with is the broad pattern of outperformance we're starting to see in some of the commodity currencies. So when, for example, we look at the Canadian dollar, then this is at a rather important juncture. We're back testing the region of the dollar's progression of higher reaction lows. And we had Russian growth coming through stronger than anticipated in here today. And that was on the back of construction activity, but of course we have to think about what is it that is driving the Russian economy, and it is commodity exports. Well, the CRTX index is right at the upper side of its range. The FTSE 350 mining index is at the upper side, or at least it's bounced from the region of the trend mean and is coming back up towards that psychological 20,000 level. If we look at the ASX resources index, well, it is also coming back up towards the upper side of its range. If we go then back to the let's see if I can remember the ticker. Yes, that's the materials index in Canada. We're going to get a pretty similar pattern. So what that is highlighting is there is renewed optimism about the outlook for the resources sector. And certainly the Canadian index has been underperforming because it has got more oil in it. Well, that's certainly one factor that's inhibiting the outperformance of the Canadian sector. But by and large, we're seeing renewed optimism. That's filtering through to the performance of the currencies. The Australian dollar is also right now in the region of its trend mean. It has rebounded pretty impressively after the flash decline that we saw right at the end of last year, or at the beginning of this year, in fact. Now we're at the first area of potential resistance. So this is where the big questions are going to get asked. Well, that's also, I think, important for the outlook for the Australian stock market. The ASX 200 has not been particularly consistent over the course of the last few years, and that was a pretty significant decline we saw in 2015. And then we saw the bounce back in early 2016. Now we've seen a reaction of not quite similar magnitude in 2018. But the big question is whether it is going to be able to push back above the trend mean. Even back in 2015, we had a number of reversions to the mean which ultimately failed. So we are at a critical juncture here for the outlook for the Australian wider market. Then when we look at the banking sector and stripping out the insurance companies, we are presented here with a downtrend, and the banks continue to trend to hold a sequence of lower rally highs. Certainly there's been a bounce from that 7,000 area, but it's got a lot of work to do in order to really question the supply dominated environment, and that does represent a headwind for the Aussie dollar. So again, we are at a rather critical juncture here. But when we look at some of the other commodity currencies, then the South African rand is through its 200-day moving average, the Brazilian real is through its 200-day moving average, and the Russian ruble is also testing the region of its trend mean. So I think we do have evidence here of renewed interest in the commodity complex. Not necessarily all commodities. The continuous commodity index, which is unweighted, is just about steady around the 400 point level, and it's been largely ranging now for 3 years. Well, one of the commodities that we're definitely starting to see some renewed interest in is nickel, and it was up in a dynamic manner in here today. So it had been the best performer of the industrial metals until the middle of 2018, then gave up almost all of its advance, and it has been rebounding pretty impressively since the beginning of this year. So this is a significant return to demand dominance. It has broken the downtrend. It is back above the trend mean. It is also somewhat overbought in the short term. One thing I think people have forgotten about is that nickel is a major component of the newer batteries that are getting put into cars. And it's not just any nickel, but rather that they need nickel sulfide, which is a very pure form of nickel. And that is in relatively short supply. What is interesting is that when we look at some of the related shares, then Norilsk Nickel, which is the world's largest producer, as well as being the world's largest producer of palladium, is right at the upper side of a 6-year base formation. On each occasion it's got up to this level, it has failed in rather dynamic fashion. So the big question isn't so much whether it can get up to this level, but whether it can hold it and improve upon it. Then at the other end of the spectrum, you've got Sherritt International, which spent just about all of last year trending downwards. Its mines are in Cuba, and of course that's under sanctions from the USA, which had been relaxed under President Obama and enforced again under President Trump. So that has acted as a headwind, but the share has at least stabilized over the course of the last month. So there's certainly interest starting to arise out of the nickel market. Then we have copper, and it is right in the region of the trend mean. We've had a reasonably impressive move in here today that has taken it right up to the trend mean. Now the big question is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move above it. This is a very similar situation that we have for a number of those commodity-related currencies. So this is the do or die moment for a significant number of these industrial resource oriented plays. If they can push above their respective trend means, then we are going to start talking about a medium-term demand-dominated environment. If they fail, well, then that's going to renew the bearish bias. So there is a very polarized set of outcomes here from what we're probably going to see over the course of the next few days. And of course, the market is probably going to be pretty quiet with China closed. So we may in fact have to wait until next week before we get a real read on exactly what's going on in terms of the industrial resources. Then we have gold. And the gold price has been really quite steady. There is a clear potential that governments are going to try and debase their currencies in order to, in an all-out effort, to inflate their debts away. And that is about the most powerfully bullish argument that you can have for gold. In fact, it pretty much mirrors the argument for investing in gold that we had back in the early 2000s. It was exactly the same set of arguments against a background where there was an inability of miners to increase supply. Well, we did go through a significant period of investing in new supply during the bull market, particularly between about 2007 and 11. So that has brought new supply to market, but it's generally speaking at a higher cost. It was possible for gold miners to produce at $200 and $250 an ounce back in the early 2000s. It is much more common to have production rates in the region of $800 to $850 today. So they're definitely making money at $1,300, but they would make a lot more if gold were to sustain a move above $1,400. Generally speaking, it takes the mining industry a while to get the kind of data together necessary to go to banks and get money, because banks need to have consecutive years of price increases before they'll have the faith in the bull market to extend credit. So that's likely to create a headwind for gold miners' ability to outperform when they do eventually start increasing their debt loads, but that is certainly not the case today. Today they're highly leveraged to the gold price. So gold is continuing to rally here, and it's comparatively cheap, particularly versus other fixed assets like property. So that is, I think, one of the more attractive characteristics of gold right now, and the gold miners were also in positive territory in here today. So they are now back above the trend mean and have held a succession of higher reaction lows since the third quarter of last year. When we look at silver, it had bounced from the $15 area and it was well off its lows in here today. Platinum continues to be the precious metal that is underperforming most, but it was also off its lows in here today and looks like it is putting in support above the $750 area. Whereas palladium, having posted a rather large pullback in the middle of January, has continued to hold its higher reaction lows. And then we had the upside key at the beginning of last week. So this is still a demand-dominated environment for palladium. Then when we look at what's going on in oil prices, well, oil is steadying around this $60 area, and it was off its lows in here today, pretty much unchanged. This has been a very steady consolidation following the rebound we saw at the beginning of the year. It hasn't quite unwound its overextension relative to the trend mean yet, and there is potential for an additional rally from here. I think it is likely that we are going to be in for a more volatile environment on oil prices, considering the magnitude of the decline that we saw at the end of last year. And it would be, I think, incredibly uncharacteristic of the oil market to now start trending higher in a very consistent and persistent manner. It's much more likely we're going to have a lot more choppy action going forward. Well, Google is reporting its earnings right now, and the most important thing about the share is that it has bounced from 1,000. When we look at what's been going on in terms of the price performance, it's actually, I think, quite instructive to look at a point and figure chart. And when we look at the point and figure chart, we can see clearly that we have a series of ranges, one above another. And there was evidence of a pickup in the pace of the advance from 2016 through to the peak in early 2018. Then we had a bigger pullback. You can see that each of these pullbacks, that the largest one was about 4 units of scale, even there was one that was 5. Well, 5 units of scale is $110, given the box size of 22. And it never pulled back by more than that, all the way from 2009 through to the beginning of this year, when it pulled back by 6. Then it pulled back by 7. Then it bounced from $1,000 and went straight up to a new high, and then had an even bigger pullback. So this is a significant inconsistency. Not only has the sequence been more volatile, but that the size of the reactions have been greater. We have evidence of failed upside breaks, and we had never had that before. So this is no longer as consistent a chart as it used to be. And that tells us that the imbalance between supply and demand that had created the consistent 9-year advance is no longer present. Therefore, $1,000 is an incredibly important psychological level for Alphabet. It is either going to hold it, in which case we can conclude that this is support building after a particularly impressive run. But if it sustains a move below it, well then we would have to conclude that this is a completing top formation. So again, this is another share where we are at a rather critical juncture. What is also, I think, important in here right now is that the NYSE FANG index has pushed back above its trend mean, and it's being led higher by Facebook. Facebook had been the share that pulled back first, and then it has also started to bounce. It has so far held the pop on the upside that it put in last week in the aftermath of its earnings. Apple has also found at least near-term support. Despite the fact that they have slowing sales, the market is liking their talk of a subscription business model. The subscription business model is, I think, solves a number of different potential problems for a lot of technology companies. The first is the cyclicality of their earnings, that they have generally had very volatile chart patterns and price movement for the simple reason that it was difficult to model their cash flows. That they would have a surge in income when they brought out a new product, and then that would taper off until they came up with the next one. With the subscription business model, it is very easy to predict what your earnings are going to be based upon your churn rate and then your growth in subscriber numbers. Then that is tends to be rewarded with a higher multiple by the stock market, and that definitely helps to support options values for the board. So they have a number of different incentives. But then you also have the fact that with the subscription model, you get instant feedback about the success or otherwise of your products. It also means that you're in constant beta mode. So you're constantly trying to improve your products without having to bring out new ones and then rely on those to drive the business. So there are clear advantages to the subscription model. Apple may well eventually adopt it in a more full-throated fashion, but it is certainly experimenting with it. It is, I think, quite interesting that Microsoft is now the largest company in the world, and it has embraced the subscription business model, and it has bounced pretty impressively from that $100 area. Adobe was the company that pioneered it, and it is also exhibiting relative strength in here. Netflix might have a substantial run rate on its income, but it's also in positive territory here and has bounced back pretty impressively from that very accelerated decline that we had at the end of last year. So there is certainly evidence that the subscription business model is providing the kind of stability that is prized by investors. And it is particularly interesting that when we look at the kinds of companies that have adopted it, well, then they are representative not just of the largest companies in the world, but also some of those that have held up best in this reaction. Well, Amazon has also adopted a subscription model with its Prime membership, and the share is now right in the region of its trend mean. It was up and down in here today and has finished out the day in very mildly positive territory. There has been a tight range underway for just about all of January. And the big question people are asking is whether it is going to be able to sustain a move above $1,800. If it can, well, then we can start to think about that this was a big pullback, but that it was a buying opportunity. And because Amazon is emblematic of the buy the dip strategy, then what happens in terms of the success or otherwise of that buy the dip strategy in its shares is going to have a significant impact on sentiment. So Amazon and Google represent the key shares to watch in terms of investor sentiment. At least that certainly appears to be the clear conclusion from this market. Now, when we look at the US dollar, it would be easy to make a bearish case for the dollar because the Federal Reserve is starting to roll back on its commitment to continue to tighten policy, whether that is raising interest rates or reducing the size of its balance sheet. But it really does depend on what currency you are going to compare it to, because one of the things that David said most with regard to the currency markets was that happiness was having the central bank on your side, but also to match the strongest with the weakest. And the dollar index is primarily about the dollar and the euro. Well, the eurozone still has a lot of challenges, and perhaps most acute of those is the banking sector. And the European banks were in rather clear negative territory in here today. Banco Sabadell has broken down, and I'm just going to, I have to admit that I always get myself mixed up between Banco and Banca. Anyway, when we look at Banco Sabadell, it has broken the 1 euro level, and that is a clear breakdown from this range that's been going on since 2012. Caixa Bank, which was cobbled together from all the Caixas in, and I'm sure I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, but it was cobbled together from all the regional banks in Spain, but that is also trending down, following the CEO's view that the bank is going to experience a difficult 2019. But that's a pretty bearish chart pattern. Well, we don't have quite the same bearishness in the bigger banks like Santander. And Santander is one of the biggest banks in Europe as a result of the fact that it has got a big international footprint that's outside the Eurozone, which is rather rare for European banks. But it is now back at that 4 euro level, and it is going to have to bounce soon if it's going to put in a higher reaction low. Then Deutsche Bank runs the risk of losing whatever of its key employees it still has left, considering that it's cutting their salaries. And the share is coming back from this 8 euro level. Well, if it's going to put in a higher reaction low, it will bounce from above 7 euros. So this is... we're going to have some big questions asked about the banking sector. But the problem, of course, for European banks is that they're dealing with a negative interest rate environment. So they're not making any money on their loans. The ECB has just stopped its quantitative easing program, although that's a questionable conclusion considering that the ECB's balance sheet continues to expand. So banks are definitely not getting as much liquidity assistance from the central bank as they used to. And they're saddled with these massive books of non-performing loans, which they're not allowed to write off, for the simple reason that a lot of the bad loans were made by financial institutions in creditor nations. So this cross-lending that went on ahead of the financial crisis is one of the greatest inhibiting factors in the recovery of the European banking sector, and there's very little prospect that that's going to be resolved anytime soon. So with the pressure that continues to build on the European banking sector, it is hard to make a strong argument for why the euro should be rallying. Then when we look at the yen, the dollar was in pretty firm territory against it in here today. So the yen is coming back up towards this 110 level, and that had been a previous area of support for the currency. Now the question is whether it is going to push back above it. If the dollar can push back above the 110 area, then we're going to be thinking that this was a failed downside break, and then the likelihood is that it's at least going to go back up and test the 115 area. Well, the Nikkei is badly in need of some support, and a weaker currency would certainly be what the doctor ordered. It pulled back in a very dynamic manner below the 20,000 level, and it has been creeping higher over the course of the last 5 weeks. So it needs to push back above the trend mean, and it needs to do better than it has been doing in order to really demonstrate that 20,000 is still an area of important support. And the second section index has also just about unwound its oversold condition relative to the trend mean. If this is a completed type 2 top formation, and it certainly looks like it, then we could anticipate a period of right hand extension. That could be a range between 6 and 7,000. So we're at a rather critical juncture here. If the bull market is going to be reasserted, then this index will sustain a move back above 7,000. And that is looking like a big ask, considering how much of a short-term overbought condition we have right now. So I think we are at a very interesting point here, that we've seen a significant number of the commodities are in the region of their trend means. The S&P 500 is above its trend mean, and it was in additional positive territory in here today. The continued resilience of the mega cap technology shares is certainly helping to support the market. And the market is largely concluding that the Federal Reserve has got its back now. The Russell 2000, which led on the downside as well as having led on the upside previously, is now right in the region of the trend mean. So this is, again, a rather important juncture we have for markets. That's a running, I think, theme that's likely to be something we're going to be looking at for the whole of this week. But as long as we have some support for both Google and Amazon, then we're probably going to be in a reasonably benign environment. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.